Several decisions were taken around who should be allowed to build new capacity in the country, other than Eskom's effort to return to service all the mothballed plants. And remember, at that time, the view was in line with the white paper energy, on energy. The view was that we need to liberalize the sectors that are key to our economy, the input sectors. And one of the ways of bringing that was to encourage the involvement of private sector so that you can have investors bringing in FDI, but also you would imagine that you know, there would be competition around efficiency issues, and finally the consumer should be able to benefit once there is sufficient competition coupled with regulation in the system. Then in 2004, if you recall, that decision was reviewed of saying Eskom should not build and that they must only focus on return to service a program. This came after a review that was taken, taking into account an international development around what was happening in infrastructure sectors, where we have seen in other countries, in Northern America, in Europe, where you have seen blackouts and brownouts and everything. And that left an impression that you do need some state involvement in this key infrastructure sector. And in view of those developments, government took a decision that we should review that decision of Eskom not building. However, we still need to encourage and promote competition, private sector involvement, and strong regulation. And the decision was taken that Eskom will build new capacity, but up to 70%, and then will allow 30% to come from the ICT process, which is the process underway with the DME currently. So in short, I was trying to locate the debate around, you know, at some point the decision was taken for Eskom not to build. That why did we do that, and why did we review that? The paper, going back to the paper that we referred to us, that was not for the first time that we have been dealing with issues of electricity security in our supply. If you recall back when we were restructuring the sector, we had the electricity supply industry project led by GPE in terms of coordination, and then we had an EDI process, the distribution sector process, led by GME. That's where we engaged primarily also the DFID team as our donor funding partners to assist us in providing with international practices and standards, and also assist us in reviewing the system in the country. And you would see in that paper, which, as I said, that was not the first or the last paper that we are working on around the issues of security of supply. There are a number of studies that have been undertaken. We knew all along that we will run out of capacity at some point, and we needed to take note of what was happening elsewhere in other countries. The issues of reserve margin, for example, I think they have been well articulated in the presentation, that indeed we were running out of enough there, and we needed to, together with GME, you would recall this is a GME process. I mean, they are the ones responsible for the security of supply. But as GPE, as the shareholder in Eskom, which has an obligation for now, they have a full obligation to make sure that there is security of supply. So for us as a shareholder department, we have a responsibility to ensure that the government policy is implemented. The DME is leading this process, and NERSA as a regulator, they also have to make sure that they put in place standards that Eskom has to comply with. In that paper that some of the consultants worked on, there were a number of recommendations and conclusions. Some of them were not new at all. Some of them were indeed interesting. And they referred mostly to the reserve margins in other countries and what needs to be done in our country around the standard, the grid code that is used by NERSA, and all sorts of things that we needed to look at. And our input was really to look at that and share it within government and make an input to the Department of Minerals and Energy. Because ultimately within government, they are the ones who are supposed to be taking up the matter and taking up to cabinet and therefore at the policy level. So I just wanted to clarify that. But I think we are here if there are issues that people want to raise around that paper or broadly as to what are we doing from our side. We are working with Eskom, of course, with GME as well, around the investment program that is emerging. The 97 billion that was mentioned, we have gone through that program. We are satisfied with it that we are making good progress. Through our shareholder relations, we monitor the build program, but generally the quarterly and annual performance of Eskom. We have a shareholder compact. We set up targets with them, and we review that as part of our shareholder responsibility. I'll stop there.
Mr. T here, not because it, you know. Hi. Is the T here? Do you know? Well, we've got a few minutes. Anton, you know, we don't want to cut you in midway. So why don't we take a few questions now, and we'll come back to you. I think the T will be here in a few minutes. Shall we start? Who wants to... Chris?
The mic hasn't... I thought so we were being cooked alive here just now. That's why we missed you, the fact.
In future, if members want to wear shorts and sandals when they come into the committee room, please feel free to do so. Kumisa, you can wear your bikini if you want to, really. I mean, I see no reason why we shouldn't. And quite frankly, if Eskom was sensitive, what they would do is they would organize future sittings of this committee in one of their fancy holiday resorts along the beach. I mean, really, I don't know what to do. By the way, Neliswa is here in a temporary capacity. I should introduce her. Namatana, she's here. She sits on another committee, is that right? And she's been trying to work on it. Peter's been trying to work on it. Hopefully, before the year 2020, we'll solve it. But go ahead, Chris.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I've got a quick question on the EIA. When we're referring to the commission of the new, or the building of the new plant, and also, you also mentioned on one of the pages that you say, as you decommission, it's also EIA problems. So I'm just wanting clarification on we get these problems of EIA all the time. It's not a new question, but what is the main problem? Is it from lack of capacity from environment and tourism, or is it more of an admin, like a lot of the more admin problem from our side, from Eskom side?
So there's anything about EIA at one time, so it's done with.
Would you say neither who was the minister responsible for
the EIA? Okay, EIA, anybody else? No. Can we just take this question? Because I think T will be here just now. I'll come back to you, Peter.
Yeah, I think as far as decommissioning, we're not really at that stage at this point. I don't think it's a major issue around decommissioning. But certainly with these power stations and some of these transmission projects, we are working with the Department of Environment and Tourism, and there is great support we're getting from them. We have sought to find ways of speeding up the process, but unfortunately, it isn't always possible to get it, to keep us on schedule. For instance, we are now in an appeal period, and appeals are part of the process. We're not suggesting that they should not be. But it does mean that we can no longer start when we'd hope to, because that process is now taking its course. So we are ready, the contracts are ready, contractors are ready, but we're still in that EIA process, getting the appeals sorted out. So it's just to highlight, a problem that is there, but I must say that we're getting very good cooperation from the department in as far as expediting our applications.
My understanding is that Cabinet's applying its mind to, I think, streamlining the administrative process. In our budget report last year, You'll recall we said that we think the core principles of the legislation for what it does this committee supports, but it can be administered more expeditiously and so on. Sorry, Bali, what's this?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, proposed by the Honourable Peter Hendrickson, that from the AFCOM point of view, the EIA process is working as it should. The sense that we have is the Department of Environmental Affairs knows and understands that this is an important strategic priority, and we shouldn't have a lack of capacity or a lack of staff or a lack of computers or something to hold it up, and they're not doing that. They've got all of that. They've got all the staff that they need in place. However, the EIA process is of necessity just a long process, because the Director General of the Department of Environmental Affairs gives the permission for the project to go ahead after a long period of doing all the necessary work. Once that happens, any member of the public can appeal against the decision of the Director General, and the appeal authority is the Minister. The Minister has to consider the appeal. The Minister can't just thumb suck a response to the appeal. He has to consider that. That takes, of necessity, some period of time. Even if it's shortened, will take a period of time. And then, our constitutional order is such that the minister, any ministerial decision can be reviewed by a court. So an aggrieved party can then go to a court and say, we don't think the minister took the right decision, and go to a court. So all those processes, theoretically, for a project can go through. And for a big coal-fired project, you will expect those sorts of projects. It's a long process. There's nothing that's sort of wrong in the system or lack of capacity in any government department or lack of willingness or anything of that sort. And it has to happen. And we know from our utility counterparts all around the world that it happens in just about every jurisdiction in the world. If you take the United States of America, it will take about double the time, the whole process of regulatory permission than it takes in this country. So it's civilized jurisdiction, but then I should have excluded the United States. But no decent jurisdiction anywhere in the world where it can be much, much shorter than this. You know, you can make it a little bit shorter here and there, but in the end, I think that a nation should give serious consideration to the long-term generational impact of a big plant like this, and that's just going to happen.
Chair, can I just quick up? The reason why I asked this is not to find if anyone's at fault. The reason I asked was because I want to find out if ESCOM has actually built in this time period. Because now look at all the capital projects going to have. Each and every one of them going to have a problem with EIA. It's not a problem, but you have incorporated time and also potential risk of being delayed. I mean, have we built in all these EIA delays that we might possibly have with the new harbour, with the new railway roads, all these kind of stuff. That's why I raised this concern.
Chairman, we have, and in fact, we're trying to put them as early as possible, even, you know, before we have final certainty on the go-ahead of the project. But the issue here is that we're accelerating expenditure. You know, I would have indicated in one example, by as much as 12 months, the project is being moved. And when that happens, obviously you disrupt the program that you have for the EIA. But we believe that we need to accelerate as much as we can in order to start addressing the problem that we face. So we're just going to improve it as we go, but because the program itself is moving fast, the timing won't always be correct.
10 minutes, maybe 15, okay? Please.